and welcome to Future Library again. It's the podcast that just keeps on coming. Well, it does at the moment anyway, because I've been making a lot of episodes recently. As I said in the last episode, I'm not even going to bother trying to remember what number this one is, because I have now lost count completely. It will say on the file when you've downloaded it, and it will say in the little graphic that goes with it, but don't ask me what it is now. My guest today is kind of pulling back towards the podcast's roots and a place that the podcast often touches base with. He's based in Dundee. He's a musician. You're probably wondering why Dundee is a place that I keep coming back to with this. It's because I lived there and I know a lot of people there. And there's a lot of very talented people there. So that's why I keep coming back to Dundee. If I'd have lived in Glasgow, I'd have probably been doing Glasgow. But I don't. It's Dundee. Well, I don't live there at all now. I live in Birmingham. But anyway, enough of that. My guest today is Gord Matheson. Hello, Gord.
Hello, Alex.
He has a name that sounds a bit like an alien. He's the only person I know called Gord who calls himself Gord and not Gordon. You've played in numerous bands over the years, which is how I know you. You were originally in the famous, the probably one of the kind of classic bands of the early noughties in Dundee, Amy Hits the Atmosphere.
Yes.
Possibly the most influential band to come out of Scotland at that time.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. People still talk about it as if it was this great seminal thing, and it's just, oh, what can I say? You know, it was a terrific time, and we loved it very much.
The likes of those times will never come again.
No, they won't. I remember the first time I ever met you actually was at an Amy Hits the Atmosphere gig in Druthy Niebers, down on the Perth Road, and I knew you. By reputation,
yes.
beforehand and through Underground Scene website, which was a phenomenal thing that kind of happened in Dundee, mm-hmm. around about sort of 2000-2001, I think.
Yeah,
and it was in the days before Facebook, days before social networks. Really, it was online forums based around the Dundee music scene, and the effects of that, it doesn't run anymore, but the effects of that are still felt. I still bump into people and it's like, I remember you from Underground Scene, yeah. And that was how all the bands got their gigs, and that was how people got in touch with people. And yeah, so I knew you through that. And then I think the first time I met you in person, you were writing a review of our show at Druthy Niebers.
I can't remember what I wrote about it. I'm hoping it wasn't bad.
The only quote I remember from it was that you said there was something nice about bands just out of their teens playing sludgy grunge music, and it was like akin to like an old man with an old pair of slippers or something along those lines.
Well, that's all right, isn't it? That could have been worse.
Yes,
I have
yes.
called people cunts in reviews before, so that's
yep.
that's all right. Yeah, I mean, I remember I offended Eat Your Greens so much that they had a... Well, until I left the city, they had a kind of weird fatwa against me. And I think Trash yeah. Superstar was similarly insulted. So,
yeah, they were. God, yeah, I remember that. I think that was the first time I'd ever sort of been a sort of aware of your presence, as it were, was after you'd written a review. I think it might have been of Trash Superstar, and some people got upset about it, and some people leapt to your defence and. Yeah.
Yeah. For listeners who are unaware, I used to write for Is This Music magazine up in Scotland. And I took my writing style from the kind of very kind of opinionated school of reviewing, and would review things even if I hated them, and I'd say that I hated them, and I'd say why I hated them. It's kind of funny because I've had people contact me in the years since. That, like, I think one of the guys who was in a band called the Dirty Wee Middoms contacted me.
Yeah.
And he said he said at the time that he hated me because I never wrote anything good about them. But he says that now, looking back on it, I was right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, especially when you've got younger bands
yeah.
who have maybe not been used to sort of the big bad world of criticism and things like that. I think, I don't know, like, I think it's a learning curve in some ways. You have to be, when you do anything creative, you have to be open to criticism, and I think that's just part of the process. If you can't take it on board, then you'll probably struggle.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's still one of these things that when you get criticism, it does sting a little bit if somebody's kind of negative about you, and especially if they're on the ball with it. If they're completely wrong, you can go, oh, you fucking idiot, you just didn't get it. But if they kind of nail you for something that you kind of knew yourself but didn't want to admit, then that can be worse, I think. I mean, I'm not saying that I ever managed that, but, you know, I think there can be a certain amount of discomfort. I mean, I've had that happen to me, where somebody's nailed something spot on, and I thought, bastard, how dare they notice that thing that I blatantly did? You know? How dare they notice that thing I thought I'd got away with?
I had a sort of similar experience. For a while, I was doing some writing for Is This Music as well, around about 5 years ago or something, and I'd received a record in the post that was by an Edinburgh band, and I can't remember their name now, but I was kind of like yourself. I was kind of just sort of being honest, and it was pretty poor, you know. It was well recorded, but musically it was just pretty awful. So I'd written this sort of scathing review of their record, and then about 4 months later I ended up playing a gig with the band who I had reviewed, and they were playing under a different name. And I didn't realise until the very end. I'd spent all night hanging out with them, and they were lovely guys.
Yeah.
At the very end, I said, oh, I recognise your guys' names. I mean, have you guys played in other bands? And they went, oh yeah, we played in this band previously. And I was like, oh, where do I know that name from? And it just sort of hit me, and I had to just walk away from them because I'd remembered the sort of slightly things I'd said about them in the review. But they were nice guys, and I was in the car on the way home, and I was feeling really, really bad about it.
Well, there's that phrase, isn't there? There's an acronym that I think roadies occasionally use when they're kind of hired in road crew, which is describing a band as a CBGB, which is crap band, great guys, or something like that.
Yeah.
Or cool guys, or something like that. Crap band, CBGB. That's it, crap band, great blokes.
Yeah, something like that.
And it can happen. Yeah, it happens so often that you kind of meet people who are kind of genuinely nice people, but they make absolutely shit music. And then occasionally you meet people who are absolutely awful people who also make shit music, and it's much easier to be negative about them. I think it's usually when they've got huge egos attached and they think they're going to be hugely famous. I mean, I'm not thinking of Trash Superstar or anything like that, but you know, I'm not thinking about that band. And it's just a coincidence that I've mentioned that band in that sentence, listeners. Gord, you're now but far better known for Stranger's Almanac.
Yes.
Which I believe, didn't that kind of start as a kind of little solo side project thing that was, I mean, I may be completely wrong here, was it kind of a, I'm going to be doing this alongside bands kind of thing?
Yeah, that was kind of the original idea. I was playing in, we had Amy Hits the Atmosphere at the time, and that was all sort of well and good. But, I mean, we were kind of, like, I don't know, it was just, we just liked sort of getting into a room and making loads of noise, and we didn't really spend a great deal of time sort of practicing and working on things, partly through logistics. We all lived sort of quite far away from each other, so gigs tended to be sort of hastily arranged and unrehearsed. And Mike Lenny, who was playing bass in the band at the time, he'd moved to Dundee from Fife, and he'd been moonlighting in a few other bands. He was playing in a covers band. He played in Trash Superstar briefly as well. And I think he graced most Dundee bands with his presence at some stage or another. I started writing sort of little acoustic songs that I thought were quite nice and couldn't really do them in a sort of band setting. And that's kind of how that all started. And now, as the years have worn on, that's kind of the main sort of thing.
Yeah, it's often the way, isn't it? You start something as a little kind of sidey project, and it slowly through because you're initially the only member, it becomes the thing that stays going. I think it does help when you're in a band that, you know, there's only you there. It makes it much harder for it to break up.
Yes.
You know, you could decide to stop doing it, but then there's no musical differences, and it means you can just pick it up again later on if you want to. So you can have long periods.
It's a lot easier to get. It's a lot easier to get my own musical ideas across when I'm the only one in the band.
Yes, so. You're not having to explain it to anybody else.
No, exactly.
But you're not necessarily the only one in the band most of the time, are you, these days? Because isn't Avril kind of quite heavily involved?
Yeah, she is. She's, I mean, I would consider her a sort of equal member of the band. Yeah. Now, it's a sort of 50-50 duo thing that we've kind of got going on. And Avril was somebody who I was pals with way back when in Cooper, when I first kind of started doing sort of solo gigs, she would often be hanging out at my house and we'd sit and like jam on guitars together and stuff. And I think one of us just one day said, oh, we should do a gig together. And we did. And then kind of gradually over the years, it became more of a sort of 50-50. Certainly in the last sort of 2 years, it's been very kind of like split down the middle. Like I don't really, I have to bill it as a solo show now if I'm playing on my own rather than a Strangers Almanac show or something like that. But she's fantastic. She's incredibly talented, plays any instrument you could probably hope to name. And it's worked out quite well for me because I am slightly less musically gifted, shall we say. So she's able to kind of, you know, sort of enhance things and come up with like beautiful string arrangements for the songs and things like that. And she hears things that I don't hear. So it's worked out really well for us.
Yeah, I've always had a lot of time for Avril. She always struck me as being one of these people who's kind of fairly unassuming, didn't kind of blow her own trumpet a great deal, but was this kind of very talented kind of figure that kind of was slightly in the background at the time I was there, but was always kind of involved somehow with something that was going on and would always be at the gigs and stuff. And I'm kind of glad to see that she's now, you know, very much involved with everything, because like you say, she's a very, very talented, I was going to say girl, but she's a very talented woman. She's got a lot to recommend her. And I think she's a, you know, like you say, a multi-instrumentalist. I seem to remember she was a very good singer as well.
She's done everything.
She's an all-rounder, really. You know, but it's kind of weird. It kind of makes me think there's something. And listeners who've heard all the shows that have definitely talked about Dundee in the past, there's something special about Dundee, I think. I can never quite work out why Dundee is able to do the things it has done in terms of musical communities. I think, like you say, I think Underground Scene, the website, helped a lot. I remember when I moved from Dundee, I somewhat naively just assumed that every city had a website like that. and didn't realise that no such thing existed.
Yeah, it was unique, and I think a lot of people took it for granted at the time because it was just kind of always sort of there, really. And when Facebook was really the thing that killed it.
Yeah.
Because people were just communicating through that, and there was no need to go onto a separate sort of place. You could, you know, Facebook was let you have groups and group conversations and forum type things. And that kind of killed it, and it kind of became a bit redundant. But I think a lot of people missed it when it had gone, because Facebook is very individualistic, whereas Underground Scene brought this sort of collective sort of DIY element into things. And when you sort of think about how things must have been before the internet, which is something that I don't even really remember now, music communities would have had to have done that. They would have had to have gotten together with each other and actually physically sit in a room to sort out gigs and things like that, whereas Underground Scene was kind of essentially the digital version of that community, I think.
And I think the thing that helped with it was that Dundee is physically a fairly small city. So what was arranged online could very easily become reality, because you only had to drive like 5 minutes or something to meet up with the person, or walk for no more than an hour to get to anywhere in the city.
Yeah. With the city centre being sort of geographically quite small, there was never the sort of thing where like a gig would be on and you had plans to be across town that night and you'd like to have gone to the gig, but getting there would be logistically difficult. It was more the case that you were out in town that night and there was a gig going on next door to where you were, because everything was close together.
Yeah. And the thing is as well, you could also, and this is something that people did, you could play a gig with one band in one place and then dash across to a venue elsewhere and play a gig with them on the same night. You know, it's.
I had when Mike was playing in our band, he did that. He played in two different gigs on the same night in different venues across town.
It was the night that I reviewed you. In fact, thinking back, because he played with you at Druthy's.
Yeah, and then he legged off to what was then the Beat Bar.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah. There's a. I think it was. It's a city that I think is one of these places that people don't fully appreciate it either until they've left. When you're there, sometimes you can feel a little bit smothered by it and a little bit like it's this dark, depressing place just sitting on the edge of the Tay. But when you've left, you can suddenly go, hang on a second, there were really supportive venues and places that you could put on the most obscure, bizarre music and nobody would bat an eyelid and people would come and see it. you know, and you could put a bill on with a metal band and a folk band and an electronic act together, and nobody would go, oh, that's a bit weird.
You know, yeah, I mean, I kind of always just assumed that that was kind of the norm, almost.
Yeah.
But I think Dundee punches above its weight in terms of the sort of the output, and just how many people are sort of involved in making music and things like that. I mean, I don't have experience of other Scottish cities apart from playing gigs in them, but certainly Dundee just feels that it possibly per head it's maybe got more bands in it. I think, I don't know.
No, I agree with you.
I haven't done the research for that, but it wouldn't surprise me if that were the case.
No, it's actually pretty much something I used to say, that per head of population Dundee had more good bands than any other city in Britain. Mm-hmm. Because it's got a relatively small population of only something like 120,000, which is pretty tiny for a city.
Yeah.
But it's just got this very kind of tight-knit community. And I suppose also part of the reason the community was like that was that the general population of Dundee is kind of fairly disinterested in that kind of thing. So, you know, and for want of a better way of putting it, there's quite a high kind of Ned quotient in the population of Dundee, which is the same as any city or town in the UK, to be fair. So there'd be a lot of people who wouldn't be interested, but it would mean that if you wanted to have an audience, you had to kind of work with the other acts in the city. And also the thing you were saying about like Mike Lenny being kind of a floating member of lots of bands, that was quite common. Lots of people would be in lots of bands at once. I mean, the drummer in Magnetic North Pole, John Weir, was in loads of bands all the time. Mm. You know, it was just the way it was. You know, you'd share gear, you'd share members of bands, you'd put gigs on, and you'd... I mean, it reached the point, I remember, where I could ring up Drew Thien-Ebers and say, I'm putting a gig on. I don't know who I'm putting on yet, but can I book this date? And they'd be like, yeah, fine. You know. And I don't know what Drew Thien-Ebers is like now. I know it went through a bit of a phase. They had that different manageress at one point. It was around the time that I put Ghost Mice on. Right. And they had a manageress who seemed to think that music should be background for people drinking.
Yeah,
I had a few clashes with her, I have to say. I remember having a bit of an argument with her on the first night that I put a gig on with her, because she kind of thought that... Because I don't know if you're at that gig. It's the one where I end up having a stand-up row with somebody because they were talking over everybody.
That rings a bell. I might have been there at some point. It does ring a bell. That must have been a good few years ago, though.
Oh, yeah, I think it'd be 2003, maybe.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, it was Ghost Mice, me, and Fritz from Fat Goth were playing.
I totally remember that gig. I really do.
And there was that guy talking really loudly and very kind of brayingly at the back of the room. And I kind of asked him to be quiet. And then I actually went up to his table and played a song directly at him. and then he continued. He just then started having a shouting match with me. And I remember that Ghost Mice then turned off the mics altogether and just played acoustically in the room.
Right, because I remember Fritz having some, because I didn't know you that well, and I didn't know the Ghost Mice at all, but I was kind of, I'd sort of spoken to Fritz a few times, and I remember speaking to him about it afterwards, and he was just saying, yeah, that was weird, you know.
Yeah.
But Druthy's kind of, it did go through a phase a few years ago where they were really reluctant to have bands on.
Right.
Which was a shame, because it was one of the sort of best places for little gigs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it was really accessible, the booze was decently priced, and you had this tiny little basement room away from the main drinkers up the stairs.
Yeah.
And it was ideal, and they went through a phase where they weren't keen on it, and then I think they sort of realised that, well, there's not going to be a 21st birthday party on every single night of the week, so maybe if we want to keep people coming in, we should be a bit more open to bands again.
Yeah.
And the man, I can't remember the name of the company that owns it now, but they own Duke's Corner in Dundee as well,
right.
And a few places in Edinburgh. And they're, as a company, they're quite sort of encouraging for sort of live bands to be playing and DJs to be on sort of after sort of the bands finish and things like that. So it's a lot better now. They're a lot more open. They're it's kind of back to how it was, where you would ring them up and say, I'm going to put a gig on, don't know what it's going to be yet, and they're like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I thought that was great about them. I think one of the things I always felt that Druthy's missed out on was really kind of playing up its kind of gig pedigree, because when you look at the bands that have played there over the years, you know, there's been some really big names. I mean, I put Snow Patrol on there. You know, it's actually, I tell a lie, I didn't put Snow Patrol on. I put on the Unseen Festival that Fraser Leto put Snow Patrol on with. So, yeah, they played there. Bear Snare played there. Anybody who's anybody who's come from Dundee has played at Druthy's at some point.
At some point, yeah.
You know, and to think of these musicians that, you know, in the instance of Gary Lightbody, who were on the X Factor last week, playing this venue that's got a, maybe a capacity of 100. You know, it's just, and that it wasn't a big deal, and that you'd see them kind of standing around drinking at different gigs and stuff. You know, that I think the venue itself, I'm surprised it hasn't done more and started collecting gig posters for the shows that it had on, you know, and started to try and get a selection of this kind of stuff together to show what its heritage is, because I think it's been a really important venue. It's, I'm sure I heard somewhere that Green Day played there once, when they were tiny and first touring the UK, so
it wouldn't surprise me. I don't think I've heard that before, but that's something I'll need to look up. It wouldn't surprise me at all. It's
I may be completely wrong and mistaking them for another generic pop punk band, but certainly there was a fair amount of touring bands that ended up there. You know, so it was a really kind of,
and of course, Druthy's got the Druthy's that I mentioned in Doug Johnson's novel, the Ossians.
Did it
about the fictional band called the Ossians, who are touring Scotland, and their on their tour they come to Dundee, and they play a gig in Druthy's. So it's been immortalised in print as well. That's a book that I think pretty much every single one of my friends has read. I think anyone that's ever been in a band in Scotland should give the Ossians a read, because it's a hilarious book. But it mentions real life places and, you know, sort of tiny little venues. They play the St Andrews Student Union and things like that. And the description of it is absolutely perfect for anyone that's been to St Andrews Student Union. It's a weird place full of guys that play rugby and, you know, not the most suited for rock and roll bands. But yeah, it's a good read. And Druthy's is in there. He slightly overstated the capacity of Druthy's, but at least it's there and it's immortalised there forever.
Yeah, it's a fun. I think it's a kind of hidden gem of a venue, and I think it's people need to, you know, realise that, and I think the people who run it need to realise that and actually capitalise on that. I think I don't think anybody would begrudge Druthy's asking for help in tracking down posters for gigs and stuff, because
it all depends on the owners and things like that. I mean, they've got their own sort of focus. I mean, it's quite a sort of neat and tidy place with it's a gastro pub now, you know. It's kind of gone down that road, but it's still, I mean, there's still, even like in the last couple of weeks, there's been gigs on there. I played there end of the summer, I think. Yeah. A couple of times, and yeah, it's just a nice cozy wee place to play. It's really good for acoustic shows.
Yes.
It's fantastic for that, especially if you've got a respectful audience who are kind of keeping relatively quiet. It's the perfect atmosphere for little candlelit acoustic shows.
And does Mitch from Soundwave still do regular sound in Dundee?
I'm not sure, actually. Mitch was a guy that I always just sort of, I knew who he was, but I was never, I don't think I'd ever met him, really. I must have done over the years. But I'm not sure. I think there's more of a sort of variety of people doing sound and things like that, which is it's another good thing. I mean, there's a lot of sound engineers kicking around in Dundee. Like, you don't find it difficult to find someone to do sound at a gig for you.
No. I mean, I think the thing was, when I was doing gigs back there, you know, between 98 and 2004, it was pretty much Mitch was the guy who did the sound at gigs, to the point where when Magnetic North Pole played at Tea in the Park, we took him with us. And I think Leto took him with them on some shows as well, because he was such a on-the-ball guy. And because he'd done the sound for practically everybody in the city by that point, dozens of times, he knew exactly how people should sound, how they wanted to sound, and he knew how to get them to sound like that. You know, and he knew you could trust a band to do a quick sound check and do what he asked and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think that helped as well. I think there's, but I think, like you say, I think having lots of different people as well could be a benefit, because then you've got a bit of variety in there.
But yeah, and it all lends itself to the sort of the community aspect as well, yes. Where because it's a sort of very sort of small space, and there is only, I don't know, half a dozen sort of venues that put on gigs regularly, although they're very, very good. There's not a huge number of venues. And you just sort of tend to sort of get to know people and things like that a lot easier than you would do in a sort of larger place.
Yeah. So talking of venues at the time, there was the Westport Bar. That used to be a fantastic little venue, kind of sitting on its own in a little quite elderly whitewashed building. I think it's pebble dashed, it was. Sitting on its own next to a bit of wasteland car park. And part of next to a building that had part of Abertay University's student union in it. That got demolished, sadly, and then it moved into a new premises on, was it South Tay Street it moved to?
It's South Ward Road.
Oh, that's
I think,
the one, yeah.
The name of the street.
And it was on there, and it was above a, well, it kind of was next to a snooker hole. And is it still open, the Westport Bar, or is it?
The last time I checked it was, but that could have been any number of months ago. That was kind of one of those venues that there was a phase a couple of years ago in Dundee that got everyone a little bit worried, where it was round about the time Droofies were sort of doing themselves up and they weren't sort of keen on bands coming on. The Westport had kind of started dying a death. Nobody was putting gigs on there. The Doghouse, which was a famous Dundee venue, had gone into administration and they'd had to close their doors. So within the space of like a year or something, there was like three of them, and the Beat Bar as well. So you had like four sort of prominent venues all closing within a very sort of short period of time, or not necessarily closing, but just changing what their kind of focus was. And there was a big concern. I remember around about when I moved to Dundee in about 2007, when I moved here permanently, there was certainly then there was a bit of a concern. It's a lot better now than it was then, which is encouraging, because you always think of music scenes and things like that as dying and things getting harder and harder, but it's actually gotten better for bands in Dundee in the last 5 years, I think.
Yeah, because there was that one that was the Balcony Bar. Whatever happened to that?
The Balcony Bar was good. I really liked that. It kind of opens and closes sort of intermittently whenever it feels like, I think. last gig I played there would have been about 2 years ago. I don't think it's open now. And if it is, it's not open very regularly. I did hear somebody saying the other week that I think it's Number Ones that's next door to it, they own it.
Yeah.
And I think they were planning on knocking the two bars together or something. I can't remember. But yeah, that was a good venue. I missed that venue. It was appropriately named.
Yes, because it had that balcony.
Yeah, exactly.
My abiding memory of that venue is, well, I've got a couple of memories of it. Cartwheel, the band from Australia, playing and fearing for their lives, thinking they were going to get lynched by the metal loving audience, because I put a show on and it got moved from Number Ones next door into the Balcony Bar. It was Cartwheel, Lipsick and Box all playing, which is three of the least Balcony Bar-esque bands ever. We used to call it the Balcony Home of Goth Goblins Bar.
It was a heavy metal pub.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yeah. And I remember Cartwheel being very afraid that they were going to get murdered by what they described as bogans. and I remember the other one was putting on Leanne Hall and Bella Emerson and a few other people. And Bella Emerson plays cello and plays stuff with looped cellos. And my abiding memory of that was a load of the greasy metalers going up onto the balcony and leering down her top throughout the whole gig.
Right. Yeah,
classy. Stay classy, Balcony Bar. Stay classy.
Yeah.
So that was my memories. I was more of a kind of Droothies kind of guy than the axis of the Beat Bar and the Balcony Bar.
Yeah.
I liked the Art Bar, and I liked the Rep, actually. The Rep used to be really good for putting on gigs in its cafe.
I think I played a gig with you in the Rep once, at least once.
Quite probably. That became my venue of choice towards the end of my time there.
Yeah, I've got a funny feeling the first gig that I ever did with Avril, when it was the two of us, you had either put it on or had put it on and were playing at it as well. I can't remember what the lineup was, but I do seem to remember that being one of yours, because you did do a couple of things there. I remember you having a gig on there with, who was it, Craig Pulsar?
Yes, yeah, he played.
One. And I can't remember who else played that. Oh, Otterly, I think, played that night as well.
Otterly played. I remember doing a show with Lipsick and Hazy Janes there.
I think it was at that one. I remember you playing with Lipsick there anyway.
Yeah, and I remember playing the last, my kind of leaving Dundee show there.
I was at that one as well.
I was really touched with that show because so many people turned out, probably just to make sure I was actually going. But it was a really nice show because a load of people showed up, which was really good. But I also remember putting Thanksgiving on there. That worked really well. That was a good show. A lot of people really, really liked that. There were some really good nights in that venue. I don't know if the Rep Cafe still does them, but...
There is some stuff that happens occasionally. I don't really know who puts the gigs on there, if anyone. I don't know if it's organised in-house or not, but I've read recently, I've not been down there for a while, but I have read of a few gigs sort of happening, sort of mainly sort of acoustic-y things and whatnot. But yeah, it's a nice little space.
And then there's the Doghouse, of course. And I remember being quite offended when a music magazine, I think it was an in-house kind of magazine about that was a music shop one, a thing about Dundee and only talked about the Doghouse and didn't really mention any of the other venues or any of the bands that weren't, you know, linked to the Doghouse. And I remember kind of emailing the people who ran the magazine going, what's wrong with you people?
The Doghouse, I think, had that reputation. It was kind of, I mean, I didn't have much experience of it when it was kind of at its peak, but it was certainly, I remember it sort of gaining notoriety almost when The View kind of first started to break through, because they were kind of, well, they practiced upstairs in the old Doghouse. That was kind of their rehearsal room, and a lot of their gigs were there, and it kind of became associated with them. Yeah. And then I think that kind of then, in the same way that people associated The View with Dundee bands, the Doghouse became associated with Dundee venues. I remember reading one review. I was living in England when The View were kind of sort of first hitting the album charts. And I'd mentioned that I'd spent a lot of time in Dundee, and people were saying, oh, The View, they're really good. But I remember reading one review which said that it was a Scottish music magazine. I can't remember which one it was, but it said that... The View and the Doghouse were to Dundee what the Beatles and the Cavern were to Liverpool. And I threw up in my mouth a little bit when I read it. But that was the reputation that it had. And they were certainly back then, despite the whole sort of View thing, who I can't admit to being a massive fan of, they did have a really good attitude when it came to putting gigs on the Doghouse. Yeah. It was done particularly well, but they were very, very open to, come and put gigs on and things like that. And it moved. The venue changed. And it kind of sort of died out again. And it's all different things over the years.
Didn't it move into that church building that used to be On Air East?
Yeah, that's what it used to, I was trying to think of that, what it used to be called. Yeah, it moved there, and it was called the Doghouse there for a while. And then it got taken over by a chain called 20 Rocks,
right,
who have got venues in Stirling and Inverness and places like that, I think. And it was known as 20 Rocks Dundee. And then that lasted for a year. And I don't know the story about what happened, but it's now known as Buskers. That's right. What it's called. It's still Dougie, who's been putting the gigs on there since I've been going there. He's still in charge of the gigs and things like that there, but as to who's actually running it, I've got no idea.
No. The other one that I'm trying to think of, there's another venue as well. Is it Non-Zeros?
Yes. There used to be Dexter's.
Yeah, there's one of the venues that's having sound issues with its neighbours or something.
It was. I'm pretty sure that's been resolved.
Good.
The story was there was a takeaway restaurant. It was like a takeaway, but it had seating in it and you could go in and sit in it. And they lodged a complaint with the council about the noise coming from Dexter's, or Non-Zeros as it is now. It's essentially an upstairs venue.
Yeah.
And part of their restaurant was almost directly below it. And they complained about sort of noise coming through from bands and things like that, to the point where the council went round and did all their decibel tests when a gig was on and decided that... Non-Zeros would have to stop putting gigs on.
Wow.
And there was a huge campaign on Facebook that at least a thousand people had kind of sort of put their name to, and a bunch of us wrote letters to our sort of local councillors and things like that. And ultimately, non-zeros came to an agreement whereby they would pay for extra soundproofing. So they had to put on, obviously the soundproofing is expensive, so they had to put on a load of benefit gigs for that. But happily, the people who ran the restaurant no longer own that restaurant now. Now somebody else, and there was a photograph of the respective proprietors in the paper shaking hands and saying, yeah, we'll work together. If one of us has got a problem, we'll talk about it and sit down like grown-ups instead of running away to the council and crying about it. So that resolved itself well, which is a nice happy story.
That's what you need, isn't it? Now, I mean, I've also noticed that reading things on Facebook, because I'm still linked to a lot of people in Dundee via Facebook, I've noticed that Oxjam has been putting on gigs in houses this year.
Yes, yes. That was, we played a gig at a house out in Broughty Ferry, and I was blown away by the kind of, I mean, the gig itself was wonderful. Our host was incredibly gracious, and he's a chef, so he'd made big bowls of chili for everyone, and it was just a sort of lovely time. But the Oxjam gigs were organised by a girl called Daisy, who's often involved in putting gigs on in Dundee, and she essentially coordinated the whole thing. She got a list of people who wanted gigs in their house and a list of bands that wanted to play in houses, and kind of spent all of October matching them all up. And I think I read in the paper today that they raised at least £2,500 for Oxfam.
That's really good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I mean, the gig that we did that evening alone raised £120, which is incredible when you think of sort of what people pay to go into gigs. I mean, you could put on a gig and 50 people would come and you wouldn't make anywhere near £120.
No.
The people were generous and gracious, and it was a nice sort of community thing. You know, it was very, very quaint and a little bit twee, but it was nice, and people came together for it and sort of gave up their time. And Daisy, who organised it all, like, absolutely tireless effort from her. Like, it was sterling effort.
I think there's a lot to be said for playing in houses. I think as long as you're able to do it at a volume that doesn't upset the neighbours, I think it can be really, really nice. I think getting music away from kind of stinky pubs can sometimes be a nice thing to do. I remember one of my favourite gigs I've ever played was with Lucky Dragons and Yacht and Bobby Birdman at Joe Howe from Ben Butler and Mousepad's house in Glasgow.
Right.
And playing this really quiet show because the police kept coming round, because the neighbours kept complaining. The police came around twice, and we had to turn it right down to almost nothing and play with virtually no amplification, which was kind of quite challenging because most of the bill was playing kind of electronic music on laptops.
Yeah.
And I just remember this room being kind of just lit by candles and it being really quiet. And I remember when Bobby Birdman played, instead of doing the laptop set he'd done the night before in Dundee, he kind of picked a few of us who could play instruments and just told us what chords to play before the songs, and did it that way, and did it completely unamplified. And those kind of shows could be really kind of lovely. They're the kind of things you remember. And I think I like the idea of house shows. I know that licensing laws have changed recently, certainly in England. That means that you don't have to have a music license to put on live music if the space holds less than 200 people. So, and I don't know what the licensing laws are in Scotland for that kind of thing, but certainly if they're putting on gigs in houses and stuff, it sounds to me that's possibly that there's a similar thing has happened there. I think maybe it actually happened before it happened in England. So,
There was. I don't know a huge amount about it, to be honest. I remember there was a thing in the news. It was a couple of years ago that they were trying to. I think it was maybe just Glasgow City Council. I don't know if it was all of Scotland, but they were trying to make it so that you had to have a license, no matter how many people were going to be at your venue and things like that. And a lot of bands complained. I don't know if it got passed into law or what. It was Glasgow, so
maybe it was then. Maybe the because thinking about it, because there were occasionally house shows, and the police would come and they wouldn't break it up because it was a house show. They'd just be kind of asking you to turn it down. It's the case that it's always actually been legal, and you haven't had to have a licensing thing going on.
I mean, certainly most of the house shows that I've been to, the ones I've played at in the past have all been sort of acoustic things. But the shows that I've been to where bands have been playing, like full bands, in people's living rooms and things like that, all they've kind of done is they've knocked on the neighbors' doors beforehand and said, right, we're going to have a band on, but we'll be done by 9:30.
Yeah.
Or we'll be done by 10 o'clock. And I think, I mean, 9 times out of 10, it's especially in the city centre and places like that, 9 times out of 10, the other folk are students anyway, and they're like, yeah, it's fine, we'll be out, don't worry about it, it's totally cool. So there's a lot of that kind of goes on.
Yeah. I think it's a positive thing, isn't it? I think these things are to be encouraged. So, Stranger's Almanac, then. What's coming up next, then, for you?
Well, we've actually just finished a fairly sort of busy, hectic period. So for the next wee while until the end of the year, I think it's a sort of moments for reflection, and just to kind of we played a lot of gigs between. I think in 2013 we've played more gigs than we had done in any other calendar year, and we've been really lucky this year. We've played a lot of with interesting shows. We played, the last gig we did was the house gig. The weekend before that, we were down in Manchester playing at the Carefully Planned Festival. A fortnight before that, we were playing at the Botanic Gardens in Dundee at an all-day thing. And I think the show before that, or in between, we were down in Cooper playing a gig in my hometown. The first time I'd played a gig there since I was about 17. So the last few gigs especially have been all unique and different and sort of nice in their own little different ways. And because we've been gigging so much, we haven't really had any time to sort of come up with anything new. We put an album out at the start of the year, but I think we're kind of like, well, that was fun. Let's just take a little break and write some more things. But one of the things that we kind of have planned, sorry, my cats are fighting. One of the things we've got planned is the first ever Stranger's Almanac album that I recorded on my own in 2004. With a crappy little £5 Woolworths computer mic. Next summer it'll be 10 years since I did that. So Avril and I thought that we would re-record it,
nice.
Essentially. A reboot, if you will.
Nice.
Some of the songs will have to be reworked, I think, because I'm a little bit embarrassed by them now, given that they were written so long ago. But I think that's kind of the sort of the next sort of plan, and then once sort of Christmas and all that's out of the way, we'll get back on the gig scene again and hopefully have that record out and maybe a new record of new material out in the summer as well. That's kind of the plan at the moment.
I vaguely remember, and when I say vaguely, I mean clearly, I remember, because I don't know why I said vaguely then, I can realise after I said vaguely, I thought, no, actually it's quite clear. My ex Millie did the cover of one of your records, didn't she?
She did, yeah. That was my second album. It was called All the Good Words Are Taken.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think I'd initially spoken to you about doing it, and mm-hmm. you'd said, I'm quite busy at the moment, so I'll see if Millie will have a go at it. And she did, and she did a terrific job. She had, like, did way more than I had expected.
Yeah, she embroidered it all. It was
completely embroidered. I'd sent a couple of photographs that I thought, yeah, it's something along these lines, and she just took one of the photographs and just embroidered it and scanned it and sent it back to me. And she embroidered the track listing for the back cover as well, which was just, that must have taken ages. that was nice. Yeah.
See, that's the kind of thing that would happen back then, is that people were kind of, you know, would do things like that, and
that still happens now. I mean, there was a bit of a lull, but I mean, certainly recently, I mean, you were talking about people playing in sort of loads of different bands because that was the kind of the way it happened back then. That's kind of happening again now. You're seeing a lot of bands with the same members or sort of revolving members, and it's not samey. So people aren't in two bands that sound the same. They're in two bands that sound completely different. And it's the same with I think the art community works a lot closer with the music community probably than it ever has been in Dundee. You see a lot of people putting out records that, you know, graduates from the Art College have designed, and people putting on exhibitions and things like that of gig posters and gig photography and stuff. So, yeah, it's nice. It's positive and encouraging. I like it.
Good. One thing I will ask you, do you go to the art show every year that Duncan and Jordan's didn't do?
The degree show,
yes. I've got to ask, because I used to go every year while I was there. Have the students there got over the thing of at least one of them doing huge blow-ups of pornography each year?
No, you still get that.
It's every single year somebody does that, and they think they're being so transgressive and dangerous. And it's you see it, and you walk into the room, and it's huge, great, big kind of double penetration porn painted up massively, or just hugely blown up photographs, and you just think, oh, yawn, seen it before.
Yeah, my my girlfriend's in third year at Duncan and Jordan's. No, she's in fourth year now. Sorry, this is her final year. So I've sort of been exposed to sort of more kind of arty stuff than I sort of normally would have been in the past. But we were at May's degree show, and for the most part, it was pretty good. I mean, I sort of prefer, you know, painting and illustration to sort of sculpture and things like that. And there was a lot of good stuff on show, and she's a painter. It's fine art she's doing. And she's kind of bemoaning the fact that Duncan and Jordanston are trying to, like, they've stopped teaching life drawing, for example. They're not keen on painters at all. And it's a bit of a shame. But what you were referring to about the whole porny kind of thing, there wasn't much of it, but there was one exhibition, or one exhibit of, can't remember the name of the artist, but she had, it was essentially a couple of videos of her masturbating.
Brilliant.
And sort of, you know, sort of close up, so that they were anonymous, you couldn't see her face. And it was, I understood what she was trying to say. And it was sort of, it was linked into feminism and the way sort of, you know, people sort of view pornography and things like that. And it was kind of like, well, this is the same thing, but it's more personal and it's more intimate. And well, that was what I got from it anyway. I didn't necessarily think the execution was brilliant, but I understood the concept kind of behind it. So that, I think that was the most sort of overt thing. It was in a sort of separate area, and it said on the door, make sure you don't come in if you're going to be offended by vaginas.
It's one day they'll get over that.
Yeah, I think they'll always will be one or two. And if that's what you want to do, then fair enough.
I guess, but. Yeah. Right, well, if people want to find your work online, what's the best place for them to go to?
If you go onto the internet, open up the browser of your choice and type in thestrangersalmanac.com, that will take you to our Bandcamp page. Alternatively, you can just go to Bandcamp and search for us. All of the material that we have on Bandcamp is free to download, including our most recent album, which we put out at the start of this year, I think. I can't remember. So that's up there. They're all free to download, listen to, whatever. That's pretty much the best place. And we're on Facebook as well, so you can find us on Facebook and give us a like.
Fantastic. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you, Gord. Thank you ever so much for joining me today.
Pleasure's been done.
Is there anything you would like to add before I draw proceedings to a close?
No, I mean, it's been an interesting discussion, especially when, obviously, talking about sort of the way things are in Dundee with the music scene, the art scene, and a lot of it's kind of coming together, certainly more so than it has in the last few years. I was speaking about it, and as I was speaking about it, I was aware of, you know, how encouraging that is.
Yeah. Did you have a little swelling of pride in your chest when you were thinking about it?
A little bit, yeah.
Good.
I mean, my involvement is that people ask me to play gigs and I turn up and play them. But there's so many people who are actually going out there and, you know, being encouraging to bands and putting bands on and making zines and putting on exhibitions and art galleries. There's an arts collective in Dundee called Tin Roof that is kind of, it's a grassroots thing, and they've got a fabulous studio space now. They put gigs on there sometimes. We have zine launches there and whatnot, and it's very welcoming for people. There's always the danger that these things are going to get quite cliquey, and other people might have a different view of it, but certainly I don't see it like that. I see it as being very encouraging. A lot of sort of younger bands have been getting put on. It's not all just like guys in their 30s. So it's a positive thing, and it's there to be used, I think.
Well, I think that's interesting what you say. I think the thing is about Dundee is that there is a clique. However, it is a clique of all the musicians and artists in the city. And it welcomes people in when they come in from outside. So I think that's the kind of clique we can all get behind.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So it's kind of an all-encompassing mega clique.
Yes.
And that's what you need.
We're all part of the clique.
Excellent. And that's how it should be. Well, on that bombshell, All that's left to say is download next time. Instructions on where you can get things are in a little bit. I've stuck on the end of the podcast. People who've been listening to the last few episodes will notice it now that there's a little bit at the end that always sounds the same because I put the same bit on. So that's where you can get things. But yeah, go and check out Gord's music. It is very, very good indeed. Get behind Dundee. Dundee's going for City of Culture. It should get it because it's a fantastic place. I need to go back up there and visit at some point because I really love the city. So, but yeah, Gord, thank you very much. All that's left to say is a typical and traditional Future Library goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Future Library is brought to you by PetPiranha.com, where you can go and find out various things about people who we've talked about and various people who haven't been on the podcast yet, but might be in the future. If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's twitter.com/FutureLibrary1, so that's Future Library with a number 1. And you can email me at alexbottom@gmail.com. And don't forget to subscribe via iTunes. Just search for Future Library there. That's it. Thanks.